The FAA may be falling behind badly in implementing NextGen. The F-35C passes its drop tests. And a commemorative Air Force B-25 makes a precautionary landing in Iowa. This is Aero News. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for downloading this AeroCast. Here's what's up in aviation for Friday, June 25th, 2010. A report from DOT's Inspector General indicates that the FAA is far behind schedule in moving from planning to implementation for NextGen, and that critical actions are needed if the agency is going to meet its deployment targets. The IG says the FAA has yet to establish firm requirements to help guide cost and schedule estimates for adjustments to existing projects or new acquisitions, and has not modified its acquisition management system to gauge the impact of a single next-gen investment on multiple initiatives or manage efforts in an integrated way. Quote, FAA's tendency to focus on individual programs has also limited its ability to assess how it will concurrently implement multiple interdependent programs and mitigate any associated risks, unquote. The report also says FAA has not yet acquired the necessary skill sets and expertise to successfully implement NextGen, and raises issues with budgeting, unreadiness on the part of partner agencies, and missed opportunities to leverage other agencies' research and development efforts to enhance NextGen development and reduce costs. The report comes with a list of specific recommendations, and the FAA says it's already at work on some of them. Find more detail in the text version of this story, dated June 24th, at aero-news.net. The first test flight of the carrier variant of the F-35 Lightning II happened on June 6th. Now, Lockheed Martin has announced the successful drop testing of the F-35C to simulate the abuse it'll have to endure in carrier service. The tests were conducted at Vought Aircraft Industries in Grand Prairie, Texas. A ground test article was dropped from heights exceeding 11 feet at maximum carrier landing weight, simulating a sink rate of 26.4 feet per second. That's roughly equivalent to bringing the plane down at 1,600 feet per minute with no flare before hitting the deck. Lockheed says no load exceedances or structural issues were found at any of the drop conditions. The tests proved more than the stoutness of the plane's airframe. After all, this stuff was all designed first on computers. Larry Lawson, F-35 Program General Manager, observed, quote, "This testing also validates the design tools and analysis," unquote. He adds that the tests are an important step toward readiness for actual carrier landing tests. A commemorative Air Force B-25 returning to St. Paul, Minnesota, made a precautionary landing Sunday night in Muscatine, Iowa, because of an engine problem. The plane had been part of a display at the Cape Girardeau Regional Air Festival in Missouri over the weekend. The crew members belonged to CAF's Minnesota Wing. KTTC Television reports that pilot Alan Miller said he made a stop to shut down one of the Warbird's two engines. The plane, dubbed Miss Mitchell, flew more than 135 missions over North Africa and Italy during World War II. She was returned to flying condition in a 12-year restoration that wrapped up in 1992. Up next on ANN, GA Group's Plan 100 LOLED's last stand. The last two shuttle flights may be delayed. And President Obama wants $100 million to boost aerospace employment. You're listening to Aero News.
Uncramp your style in a new Citation CJ2 Plus from Cessna. Now with integrated ProLine 21 avionics, FADEC, and a restyled cockpit and cabin. In the CJ2 Plus, you'll carry more payload than you could in the original CJ2. You'll climb and cruise faster. You'll have the freedom to use even shorter runways. And you'll do it all on less fuel. For a sure thing, call 1-800-4-CESSNA.
We're back with more of your Aero Briefing for June 25th. I'm Paul Plack. The General Aviation Manufacturers Association yesterday put together a media briefing to update us on the work of its future AVGAS Strategy and Transition Plan, or the FAST Plan, a coalition approach to dealing with the coming end of the leaded AVGAS era. The coalition includes AOPA, EAA, and NBAA, representing aircraft operators, GAMA, representing manufacturers, and NATA for the FBOs, the American Petroleum Institute, and the National Petrochemical Refiners Association also have seats, and significantly, with the sole exception of Walter DeRozier, Gamma's VP of Engineering and Maintenance, all represented groups sent their PR, or government relations guys, as presenters. That was an early hint at where the agenda was headed. The coalition has determined that economic, environmental, and political factors all threaten the leaded status quo. But the coalition appears most focused on the political challenges, perhaps because that's within the expertise of its members. Economically, Avgas now is a boutique product, representing a tiny fraction of the petroleum-based fuels processed by the industry, and may cease to justify its refining and storage costs to producers at any time. From an environmental standpoint, 40 years after cars started transitioning to unleaded fuels, piston aircraft are the conspicuous holdouts still dumping lead into the atmosphere, and the EPA has been sued into doing something about it. Politically, the continued use of leaded fuels makes GA an easy target for NIMBYs, especially when communities near GA airports are about to be held to tighter airborne lead standards. There is currently no direct replacement for 100 low lead, which meets all the standards necessary to support the entire piston fleet, which averages 38 years old and includes everything from low compression, World War II vintage patch putters, which are happiest on 87 octane, to late model turbocharged high-performance planes, which need every bit of protection from detonation they can get. The course outlined by the coalition yesterday was to seek a public-private partnership, better access to the STC process for small innovators, and more slack from regulators to research a replacement fuel which will not burden aircraft owners with conversion costs. Teledyne Continental Motors has announced a priority of designing and building engines which can run on, or later be retrofitted to run on, 94 octane unleaded, essentially 100 low lead without the lead. This strategy was referred to by EAA's Doug McNair as a prudent business decision, but he called the fuel itself a worst-case scenario among possible outcomes. Personally, I'm glad somebody's working on engines which don't need lead, because after waiting 40 years for general aviation to find a way to stop using it, I find it hard to imagine that the EPA will give us another 20. In today's Aero News special feature, you'll hear snippets from a few of these experts distilled from yesterday's briefing. In the coming weeks, I'm going to try to seek out comments from the engineering guys and alternative fuel developers. The final two space shuttle missions may be delayed by several months, extending the program into February of next year. NASA mission managers have proposed that the final Discovery launch to start mission STS-133 be pushed back to October 29th, and the last Endeavour liftoff, which would be the end of the program, not be attempted till February 28th. NASA spokesman Mike Curie tells Fox News that NASA needs a little more time to get some spare hardware ready to fly on Discovery. That would mean Endeavour would have to work around launch pad readiness, astronomic conditions, and an available time when Russian manned and unmanned supply ships are not already docked at the International Space Station. The soonest all those planets align is February. Curie tells Space.com no firm decision has been made, and the proposal will be reviewed by all parties involved. A fiscal 2011 budget amendment submitted by the Obama administration last week to Congress aims up to $100 million at spurring regional economic growth and job creation in the aerospace industry. The funds would come from money earmarked for transitioning out of NASA's Constellation program, which the president wants to scrap. The amendment would provide up to $40 million in aid for Florida's Space Coast and a maximum of $60 million for other affected regions. The president last month created a task force on space industry workforce and economic development, chaired by NASA Administrator Charles Bolden, and charged it with presenting recommendations by August 15th. Bolden says of the effort, quote, "We're very pleased the president has asked for additional support to help the communities and workers most deeply involved in our space program. NASA's workforce is incredibly talented and dedicated. This investment in our people is essential to spurring economic growth and job creation," unquote. Still ahead, two new members of the NTSB are confirmed. Airbus announces an impressive milestone for the A320, and a Cessna 401 gets stuck in a tree. You're listening to Aero News.
Welcome to Cirrus Design, maker of the world's best-selling personal aircraft, the sleek SR-22. Cirrus planes feature the latest technologies and are equipped with an exclusive, life-saving parachute system. It is our mission to make personal aviation safe, affordable, and convenient. At Cirrus, we offer a test drive like no one else in the business.
We're back to wrap up your Aero Briefing for Friday, June 25th. I'm Paul Plack. A former Boeing engineer and a former NASA scientist have been confirmed to the U.S. National Transportation Safety Board. On Tuesday, the U.S. Senate approved the nominations of Dr. Earl Wiener and Dr. Mark Rosekind by unanimous consent. The White House nominated Rosekind last October and Dr. Wiener in January of this year. Wiener is 65 and has lived in Sherwood, Oregon since 2005. The Sherwood Gazette reports that he holds a degree in aerospace engineering and is a fellow at the Flight Safety Foundation. He was chief engineer in Boeing's commercial airplane division. Dr. Rosekind has led significant early investigative work into flight crew fatigue during his time with NASA, and his research into fatigue has made him one of the preeminent authorities on the issue, a point he made during his confirmation hearing in November. Find extensive bios on both new members of the board in the text version of this story, dated June 24th, at aero-news.net. Ready for some big numbers? Airbus says its A320 family of airliners, which entered commercial service in 1988, has now passed the 50 million cycle milestone, each cycle including a takeoff and landing. And there are more big numbers. Airbus sales chief John Leahy observes, quote, "One of our A320 family aircraft takes off every 6 seconds somewhere around the world, and they have carried more than 5 billion people, which is a huge achievement," unquote. Airbus says it has sold 6,500 of the planes and delivered more than 4,300 of them to 310 customers and operators worldwide. At the current rate of operations, in roughly another 5 years, the passenger total count for the A320 will pass the population of the Earth. That will make for a really interesting Airbus news release. And finally today, we can't wait to get details on this one. A 1968 Cessna 401, which had been conducting aerial survey work in Massachusetts, reportedly got stuck in a tree last Saturday near Plymouth Municipal Airport. The FAA told the Associated Press the plane was returning to the airport about 5:15 p.m. Eastern Time when it wound up in a tree in a residential area. None of the three people on board was seriously injured. The FAA's Arlene Salak says it's too early to know what might have caused that accident. That's the latest from Aero News. Remember to check out the ANN special feature. Today, we'll get some background on the issues involved in replacing leaded avgas from panelists at Gamma's media briefing held yesterday. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Enjoy your weekend and stay out of the trees. And have a clear and unlimited day.